Welcome to the Back 9 Report, presented by eDraft.com.
Hello, and welcome to this week's edition of the Back 9 Report, presented by eDraft.com. We go live every Tuesday at 8 p.m. Eastern Time, checking on the world of golf to bring you the latest news, insights, analysis, interviews, recaps, previews. Hey, we cover anything and everything golf. My name is Carlos Torres. Every week, I'm alongside my co-host, Fred Alvader. Fred, hi, how are you today?
Oh, Carlos, this is truly a sad day for me. I am a huge Eagles fan and have always loved Glenn Frey. So his passing last night, early this morning, that's really too bad. Plus, we're about the same age and makes you feel very mortal. So the only thing I can say is take it easy, Desperado. It's just another tequila sunrise. He was a great friend of golf and always one of the coolest guys in any room. But, Carlos, we have a lot of golf to talk about tonight. The Shark is out at Fox. Two old guys battled for the Sony Open title. And speaking of old guys, the Champions Tour begins this week in Hawaii with the Mitsubishi Electric Championship. Plus, we have news about two amateur tournaments that won big events this week. Let's go, Carlos.
Let's go. And our VIG, very important guest of the week, will be John Kaczkowski, the president and CEO of the Western Golf Association. And, man, you make it sound like people are old because they're 37 and 35, you know.
But they are, man, when you got all these 20-year-olds winning.
Oh, man, but they're not that old, man. Don't make me feel that bad. Anyway, let's start with the weekend backspin. And talking about those old guys, you know, a birdie on the second extra playoff hole meant that Argentina's Fabian Gomez, who's 37, beat USA's Brent Snedeker, who's 35, to win the Sony Open. Gomez shot an incredible 62 on that final round, which included a round of seven straight birdies at one point. He holed definitely a monster on the 72nd hole to get into that playoff. Snedeker, he didn't do bad. He shot a 66 on Sunday to complete a tremendous tournament of welcome return to form for that former world number four. The win means that Gomez is now ranked 55th in the world and has given himself a superb chance to qualify for the grand stage this year, the Rio Olympics later this year, with the top two players from each country qualifying for that chance to win the gold medal. Gomez and Emiliano Grillo, who is 33rd in the world, are well ahead of third place Angel Cabrera, who is currently 227 for Argentina. Gomez, he admitted that is fueling him to win and be better. He seemed very happy about being able to represent his country on the world's biggest stage. Gomez became only the fourth Argentinian to win multiple tour titles, joining Roberto De Vicenzo, Jose Cáceres, and Angel Cabrera. Third place, Zach Blair, he needed to eagle the last to make the playoff and hit a 3-wood to 10 feet from 230 yards, but he missed that putt. Also, there was near controversy with him when he was asked if he had anchored his putter when he was in contact with his shirt on the 17th hole in that final round. He said that, hey, I was asking him, what is he talking about, buddy? I honestly don't know what to say other than I'm not even sure what happened until I guess I saw it. I definitely wasn't anchoring it on purpose. Fred, since the anchoring ban came in January 1st, this is the first such time this anchoring question has come about, and it will be interesting if this is an issue that will continue to keep happening.
Yeah, I saw that, and I thought it was really stupid that they even asked him about it. And that's the kind of crap that's going to come up. This is just, it's going to get completely out of hand. The way the rules written, I mean, you might need to be a lawyer to understand it. I happened to catch Morning Drive, and they did a whole session with Charlie Reimer. And, you know, he was saying it makes sense, too, that, you know, when you get into Pebble and some of these tournaments where you get adverse weather and you get rain suits on and you get bulkier clothes, and the way, you know, these longer putters, even though they're not anchoring to their body, they're going to touch their clothes. So it's just stupid. It's not – the whole thing's dumb. So anyhow, let's move on. on the European tour, Carlos, we had a couple things going on. First of all, you had the Eurasia Cup from Malaysia, and it was all Europe. 2 years ago, they had this thing and ended in a 10-10 tie, but this one was all Europe, 18.5 to 5.5. Ian Poulter, Andy Sullivan, Lee Westwood, Danny Willett, Matt Fitzpatrick, Craig Wood, Victor Dubuisson, Soren Yeltsin, and Broberg all won singles matches on the last day. Austria's Bern Wiesberger and Irishman Shane Lowry were the only Europeans that lost their matches in singles. You've got Europe came in the final day with a 9-3 lead, and they just added to it. The first meeting, as I mentioned, in 2014 ended a 10-10 tie. This year's competition was held in Kuala Lumpur. Darren Clark, who will captain the European Ryder Cup team in September, was the winning captain versus Jeev Milka Singh for the Asians. Also on the European Tour, they had a medal play event in South Africa, the Joburg Open at Royal Johannesburg. In the second, in the other event, 21-year-old Hayden Porteous from South Africa won the Joburg Open for his inaugural win on the European Tour. Porteous is the second South African to win a European Tour event in as many weeks to claim his first win. If you remember, 22-year-old South African Brandon Stone won last week at the BMW South African Open. And, of course, Porteous is just 21 years old. So you got another couple good, really good South Africans coming on the tour. Three players earned spots in the Open Championship at Royal Tournestrune this summer. Along with Porteous, fellow countryman Xander Lombard, as well as Englishman Anthony Wall. Some bad news coming out of the European Tour. Jamie Donaldson, who finished 213 and 2014 in the top five in the race to Dubai, and finished 2015 at number 49 in the world ranking, had a little mishap with a chainsaw, nearly cut off his little finger on his left hand. He said he's planning on returning at the Dubai Desert Classic in a couple weeks, but I doubt that very much. I think he's being a little optimistic. If it's healed enough to return by March, I'm going to be surprised. I saw the pictures online of that thing. When are golfers going to, understand that they're not real men? They should stay away from, like, power tools, chainsaws and all those kind of things, not play soccer. You know, they hurt themselves. Skiing is a bad thing this time of year, too. European Tour shifted into high gear this week with the Abu Dhabi HSBC Golf Championship. They have a stellar field with defending champ, I can't think of the kid's name right now, but anyhow, plus the first two rounds, this is what we really want to know. World number one, Jordan Spieth, is going to be paired with number two, Rory McIlroy, and number six, Ricky Fowler. That should be enough to get you to set your DVR to the Golf Channel for the first two rounds, Carlos.
And just to add to the defending champion, his name is Gary Stahl. So
yeah, Stahl. Yeah, I'm sorry.
That's why we're.
I wrote the wrong name down. I for some reason I wrote Erik Henrik Stenson's name down here. I meant to change that. I knew it, and then
he wins so much. Stenson wins so much down there that it's like he's winning every time. So
I know. That's exactly right. I think Rory's been runner up at this thing four times.
Yeah,
I believe.
That's right.
Yeah. So this should be pretty good. We had a pretty good field in the high end of the tournament champions, but with three guys plus Stenson plus, two or three other really good European players playing in Abu Dhabi, this should be a pretty good week of golf.
Oh, it should be, and it's starting to get heated up, the world of golf. Hey, continuing now on the weekend backs, let's talk about one of my favorite places is Latin America, and we're going to talk about the Latin American Amateur Championship. Fred, more youth movement, more. It keeps coming. They keep popping everywhere. 16-year-old Paul Chaplet from Costa Rica, he held his nerve to win the Latin American Amateur Championship by a single shot over Venezuela's Jorge Garcia after carding an excellent closing round of 70 in difficult conditions on Casa de Campos Teeth of the Dog course in Dominican Republic to finish in 3-under par. The teenager began the final day 4 shots off the 54-hole leader Gastón Bertoniti from Argentina and 3 behind Garcia. But as the leaders falter in the front nine, he raced to a 33 and moved to the top of the leaderboard. Hey, he never looked back. That closing stretch on Peace Dies, Teeth of the Dog course at Casa de Campo, let me tell you, I've seen it many times. It's really tough at the best of times. But when you add a strong wind whipping off the ocean, it's even more testing. So Chaplet is incredible. He was the youngest player to make the cut, and he held his nerve brilliantly there with pars at both the 17th and 18th, two very tough closing holes. And the title and the incredible prize was the invite to the 2016 Masters that went to him. As a winner of this tournament, not only he receives an invitation to that U.S. Masters, but he will also earn an exemption into the Amateur Championship at Royal Portugal and to any USGA Amateur Championship for which he is eligible, including the U.S. Amateur. Both Chaplet and Garcia also gain an exemption to the final qualifying for the Open Championship at Royal Troon and final stage qualifying for the U.S. Open at Oakland Country Club. So for Chaplet, he will be the first Costa Rican and first player from Central America that will be playing at Augusta. And his friend and teammate, Andres Rusi, he caddied for him on the final day, and Chaplet was quick to suggest that his pal may reprise that role in August, Fred. I mean, in Augusta, in April.
Yeah, hey, we had another. The ladies had a big amateur tournament down in Florida also last week, the Sally Tournament. It's been a big amateur since 1926. Some of the best women amateurs from around the world have competed in this prestigious event at Oceanside Country Club in Ormond Beach, Florida. You have 16-year-old Mika Liu of California won this year's event. She's headed to Stanford. She played flawlessly on a course that is very close to her home away from home, the IMG Academy in Bradenton. She carded 5 birdies, hit 17 greens in the final round. She is no stranger to the winner's circle. She partnered with Rinko Matsunaga last May to win the inaugural U.S. Women's Amateur Four Ball at Pacific Dunes. Former winners of this event read like a who's who in women's golf. Patty Berg, Babe Zaharias, Christy Kerr, Lexi Thompson, Jessica Korda, and Brooke Henderson are just a few of the big names that have hoisted the cup. In her post-round interview, Lou said, "The history is really full, and maybe one day I'll follow in their footsteps. I'm excited about the thought of maybe going pro, but I'm more excited about going to Stanford and developing there. Good for her. Go to college a couple years, have a little fun." Carlos, that's all I have for the backspin for tonight.
And we'll wrap up our weekend backspin. When we come back, we're going to take a short break. When we come back, we're going to have the Par 5 News presented by United Golf Network. So don't go away.
Thank you for listening. We'll be right back. In the meantime, don't forget to visit www.edraft.com for analysis, breaking news, and more. Also, remember to follow us on Twitter at edraftsports and on Facebook at facebook.com/edraftsports. Now, back to the show.
And we're back, and now it's time for the Par 5 News that are presented by United Golf Network. And as usual, Fred takes the tee shot, and I know you have a lot to talk about, and Greg Norman tops our list this week.
Yeah, Carlos, Greg Norman getting canned at Fox Sports is the lead story on tonight's Par 5 News presented by United Golf Network. But before I get to that, a news flash just hit about 5:30 today. The Barclays is dropping out as a sponsor of the New York tournament in the FedEx Cup playoffs in 2017, and Northern Trust Bank will replace them. And as you know, Northern Trust hosts the tournament held at Riviera in Los Angeles, and it's rumored they're going to take that old Barclays tournament over, and it's rumored that Hyundai, who has a big presence in Southern California, will step in to take Northern Trust's place. It's also rumored that Deutsche Bank will end its sponsorship of its playoff event in Boston in 2017. There's no news who may pick that up or if it will be dropped from the schedule permanently. There is a movement for 3 playoff events rather than 4. That's enough about that. I'm sure we'll hear more about that in the future. Now back to the Shark. In a post from Gary Van Sickle at golf.com yesterday, it was reported that Greg Norman was fired by Fox Sports as their lead announcer for their coverage of the USGA events. Norman was the lead announcer and was teamed with Joe Buck in the tower to anchor Fox's golf broadcasts. A source who asked not to be identified said Norman wasn't very good on the air because he didn't do his homework and he didn't know any players who weren't Australian. Norman just wasn't engaged in any of the Fox telecasts the way the network had hoped. It was tough for the whole staff because he wasn't involved in the shows like a lead analyst should be. Maybe he thought just being Greg Norman was enough. He's been successful in everything he's done in business, but he wasn't good at TV. He was a team player, but when the cameras turned on, he just went silent. The original hiring of Norman was suspect. He had limited experience in television, and Fox did not do a good job of placing experienced talent around him. With several businesses that he is actively involved in managing, his time available to prep for telecasts had to be limited. The truth is that Fox broadcasts of the USGA events last season, beginning with the four-ball events at Bandon Dunes, were horrid in every aspect. Joe Buck is one of the best announcers in baseball and football, but not so much at golf. Holly Saunders performed well in her role at the Golf Channel, but has been a complete bust thus far at Fox. Corey Pavin seemed like a fish out of water and was utterly useless. Brad Faxon was the only bright spot on the telecast, and he just couldn't do it all alone. Besides that, the camera work, timing, overall production of special segments, and announcing were all well below industry standards of ABC, NBC, ESPN, Golf Channel, and CBS. A high school video class could have done a better job than Fox was able to muster. Maybe the $1 billion they laid out to buy the rights for the USGA tournaments did not leave them enough cash to pay for top-name talent. Norman has a lot of pride. To be let go just 1 year into a 12-year contract has to be a huge blow to the ego of a former major champion. He took to Twitter on Monday, hashtag Monday Morning Motivator. Over the years, I've learned that no business can stand still. There are always changes in ownership and personnel, and invariably challenges with keeping your product or service relevant and in demand. The reality is that businesses change. They evolve. We are going to keep moving, just like a shark. Fox is now left to replace its number one golf announcer. Paul Azinger, along with ESPN's Mike Tirico, immediately popped to mind as the best candidates, but will they want to take on that kind of a challenge? The bigger question is, what will they do to the production staff if they don't have the right people behind the cameras? It doesn't matter who sits in front of them. The good news for Fox is that they pretty much have nowhere to go but up, Carlos.
Is it true or not, the rumors that they're trying to contact you for that position?
I'm open. I can give my phone number and my email, Twitter, Facebook. I am available. I am purchasable. I do travel for cash.
There you go. The front elevator is open, so hey.
And I guarantee you something, Carlos. They cannot make me look good on camera. I guarantee it.
That'll be difficult, huh?
I got a face made for radio, man.
Oh, let's keep it here. You know what, Fred? Tiger Woods is no longer golf's biggest moneymaker. That title now belongs to Jordan Spieth. The two-time 2015 major winner topped Golf Digest annual list of the game's highest earners, pulling in an estimated $54 million in 2015. He was ranked 16th in the previous year's list. However, 5 PGA Tour wins, including the Masters and the U.S. Open, earned him $22 million on the course. He pulled in an estimated additional $30 million in endorsements and other off-course earnings. Woods' 13-year reign atop the list comes to an end after a season mired in poor play and ending with a pair of back surgeries. Wood has been golf's top earner since Golf Digest list debuted in 2004. He's ranked third this year, pulling in an estimated $49 million, including $48.5 that were away from the competition, including his burgeoning golf course design business. Phil Mickelson, despite a poor 2015, finished second on the list thanks to his estimated $15 million in off-course earnings, some 20 times the $2.5 million he earned inside the ropes. Rory McIlroy was fourth with $46 million, followed by Arnold Palmer with $40 million, Jack Nicklaus with $22 million, and 2015 PGA champion Jason Day at seventh with $19.4 million. World's number one female, Lydia Ko, is on the list at 47th, earning an estimated $5.3 million. So, wow, it's incredible, that number when I saw it. I was beyond that. But I think she will be climbing that list pretty soon. And, well, a day after the news broke that Jordan Spieth has supplanted Tiger Woods, one of America's best-known brands announced a monster endorsement deal with him, and that was Coca-Cola, so that signed him to a multi-year agreement to become a brand ambassador for Coke and Dasani water. Dollar amounts were not disclosed, but Spieth's agent, Jay Dancy, told ESPN.com that the deal will be one of the biggest the company has ever made with an athlete. So if that's true, next year will be very difficult for anybody to top him on this list. Spieth is going to join now LeBron James, Jennifer Aniston, and Taylor Swift in the company's stable of endorsers, which is pretty heady company for the 22-year-old Texan with the Midas touch. What exactly can't fault, Spieth for entering an arrangement that likely will help pay the college tuitions of his eventual descendants for generations to come. Fred, but if there's one quibble, is that golf's Mr. Wholesome will now be shining a soda New England Patriots quarterback Tom Brady, recently labeled poison for kids.
Yeah, I'm not a big Coke fan. I'm not a big soft drink fan. I think, we made a big deal in this country about smoking, and I think Coke and those soda drink products are maybe as bad or worse for people than cigarettes ever were. So I'm not a big proponent of those. And that really is the first negatives that I've heard anybody write or say about Jordan Spieth, the fact that, he's picked up by Coke and going to take their money. But you know what? If they're going to throw it at him, I'd probably take it too. I can't blame him for it. So, as far as him being number one in golf earning, we saw that coming with Phil sliding, Tiger sliding, and, since Spieth won the Masters and the U.S. Open, nowhere to go but up with his personality and his style. Fortune 500 companies love him. Everybody loves him. Good for him. So we're going to talk more about him a little bit later in the show, too. Hey, Carlos, the 9th annual Morgan and Friends Fight Cancer Tournament was held last week at St. Andrews Golf Club outside of Boca Raton, Florida, and raised $1 million to fight breast cancer. The host of the event, Morgan Pressel, said, "It is surreal, honestly. I can't put it into words. The community of St. Andrews continues to blow me away every year, truly helping me make a difference. I couldn't do it without their tremendous generosity and support." Paula Kramer, Lexi Thompson, Brittany Lynchicombe, Christy Kerr, Sandra Gal, Natalie Galbus, and world number one Lydia Ko all pitched in to help Pressel in this worthwhile cause. Pressel is also very thankful to her LPGA Tour friends. "Not only are they the best golfers in the world, but they are also the best people, and they go out of their way to make sure everyone has a great time. It means the world to me that they are willing to donate their time and energy and support us." The pros all mixed it up with the fans who came out to support the tournament and the charity, signing autographs, posing for pictures, and engaging in conversation, especially with the young girls in the crowd. Christy Kerr was honored for her activities fighting cancer during festivities surrounding the tournament. Kerr's mother, aunt, and godmother are breast cancer survivors. And Kerr's Birdies for Breast Cancer Foundation does important work in the Northeast. The Christy Kerr Women's Health Center, in partnership with Jersey City Medical Center, makes breast cancer screening, diagnostic testing, and treatment programs available to all women, regardless of their ability to pay. Pressel hosts this tournament each year in memory of her late mother, Catherine Crickstein Pressel, who died from breast cancer in 2003. All proceeds from the event go to fight breast cancer, and over $5 million has been raised since the first event 9 years ago. Carlos, golf, you don't see, professional baseball teams. You don't see, the money-hungry NFL, you don't see them raising $5 million, you know, for charities or whatever. You know, golf, professional golf has raised $2 billion in its history. The LPGA Tour churns out dollar after dollar for charity. You've got outings, and I forget how many outings. I had a number on that that were held around the country and how much money was raised. I want to say, wasn't it like $5 billion just last year or something like that? We talked about it a couple months ago. The money that's raised for charity through golf and golf events is unbelievable. I got to say, that's just one of the things that's really great about golf, Carlos.
And it makes it unique and definitely one of the best things that golf has to offer. So that's great to see that Morgan and friends raised that $1 million and hope they can keep raising more and more. Hey, let's talk a little bit about somebody off the golf, but relating now to golf, and that's Baltimore Ravens quarterback Joe Flacco, who once said...
Oh, that's in the football show. It's a golf show. What's going on here? What's that?
Oh, man. So we have to talk about everything, you know? We talk about anything and everything golf. So Joe Flacco, the Baltimore Ravens quarterback, he once said that it would be a dream of his for one of his three sons to become golfer on the PGA Tour. It may be a few years before Flacco boys can take the links, but they'll have now a place to get in plenty of practice rounds on the house. When you're in the middle of a six-year, $120 million contract, you can afford things most of us can't, unless we hit the Powerball, right? Which we didn't, but anyway, like a golf course.
No, we didn't.
Ravens? No, we didn't. So Flacco, who is recovering from December knee surgery, is part of a group headed by ESPN pro football analyst Ron Jaworski that just bought Bramblewood Country Club in Mount Laurel in New Jersey. Jaworski, who is a former Philadelphia Eagles quarterback, is owner of Ron Jaworski Golf Management, Inc., which owns seven courses. Yes, when I read that, I went like, what? Seven courses? Wow. Five of them are in New Jersey and two in Pennsylvania, according to a news release on his website. In adding the 27th hole course to his portfolio, now Jaworski said his group would spend $2 million to renovate the clubhouse and banquet rooms, which had been shut down. As you may all know, Flacco is an avid golfer who co-hosted the Special Olympics golf tournament with tight end Dennis Pita last year. And Bramblewood is less than half an hour from Philadelphia and is near Audubon, New Jersey, where Flacco grew up. The call from the Baltimore Sun to Flacco's agent, John Blinta, was not answered before the publication of that article. Jaworski, who said also an avid golfer, now owns Fred. The following courses: Blue Heron Pines Golf Club in Galloway Township in New Jersey, Downington Country Club in Downington, Pennsylvania, Honey Run Golf Club in York, Pennsylvania, Riverwinds Golf and Tennis Club in West Deptford, New Jersey, Running Deer Golf Club in Pittsgrove, New Jersey, Bollybrook Country Club in Blackwood, New Jersey, and Bramblewood now. You know, Honey Run is closest to Baltimore, located just over the state line of outside of York, Pennsylvania, so... Now that I see this about Ron Jaworski, maybe he'll be taking a run at Donald Trump, Fred.
Well, Donald's on the way down and Ron's on the way up, so mm-hmm. Sounds like they're going in different directions. That's a good one. Hey, we all know that making it in professional golf is an expensive business. Just traveling to an event, paying a caddy, and staying in hotels, you know, adds up to a nice tidy sum every week. Many aspiring professionals simply do not have enough money to stay out on tour to hone their skills and make it to the big money and bright lights of the PGA Tour. Scott Langley has taken a unique route to have enough money to stay out there. He accepted a one-time lump sum payment of over $3 million from Fantex in return for 15% of his future earnings. This includes all future income tied to the athlete's brand, whether it's from the sport or from the business outside of it. That includes, for example, money from endorsement deals, fast food franchising, speaking engagements, TV appearances, and more. Can you imagine Jordan Spieth signing a deal like that? His investors would be making millions. 15% of $60 million, if my math is correct, is $9 million. That would be a at Scott Langley's money, that would be a 300% return in just 1 year. And Spieth will probably earn over $1 billion before he's done swinging a golf club. In Langley's case, however, Fantex paid him $3.06 million. Fantex was just launched last year. They raise that fee from the IPO process. If it fails to sell enough shares of the athlete in the offering, they can't pay him. It has previously brought six such public offerings to fruition. They did cancel the offering of NFL player Arian Foster, who was planned to be its first stock. Foster is also their biggest star, but he was sidelined by a back injury shortly after Fantex announced the deal. Mohamed Sanu of the Bengals, Tennessee Titans' Kendall Wright, Indianapolis Colts' Jack Muhart, and the 49ers tight end Vernon Davis are just a few of the professional athletes that have accepted this offer. Just in case you are considering buying in, Carlos, here's how it works. When Fantex signs a new professional athlete, it sets an amount of the one-time fee it will pay him, in exchange for the athlete giving Fantex a set percentage of all future earnings on and off the field in perpetuity. Yes, that means for the rest of his athletic career, but the rest of his life. Fantex must then sell enough shares in the IPO to make the amount it needs to pay the athlete. If it fails to sell enough, it will not complete the offering. The paycheck it offers each athlete varies. Chicago Bears receiver Ash Alson Jeffrey, still the biggest name Fantex has debuted, got $7.94 million, while Vernon Davis got $4 million. The stocks, meanwhile, are non-traditional, with the price meant to reflect the current perceived success of the athlete, and Fantex holds all the power in the arrangement. When you buy a share, what you're actually buying is a share in Fantex, the company. And most of the stocks are actually fluctuating very little so far, staying close to the $10 a share range. There isn't enough volatility for it to be particularly interesting yet. However, at $10 a share, why wouldn't a big fan of a certain team invest in a star from that team, even if it's just for fun? So, Carlos, this kind of takes fantasy sports to a whole new level. Could I interest you in some Tiger Woods stock? I can give you a great price on it. Carlos, that wraps up the Par 5 News presented by United Golf Network for January 19th. Would you like to buy a new TaylorMade M1 driver for substantially less than the manufacturer's suggested retail pricing? Well, United Golf Network can help you get discounted pricing on the M1 and many other golf products that every golfaholic needs. They offer a top line of golf products, including popular name brands like Nike, Wilson, Greg Norman, Ashworth, TaylorMade, Adidas, and Where to Win. Everything a golfer needs, clubs, balls, bags, shoes, apparel, and accessories, are available with discount coupons for huge savings. United Golf Network not only has an excellent product line, they also offer every golf nut the chance to earn commissions on product through their director's program. You can set up your own golf shop without having a big inventory. They also offer discounted travel through Wyndham Endless Vacations and My Golf in U.S. So visit UnitedGolfNetwork.com today. Check out their products, discounts, and their opportunity to open your very own golf pro shop, Carlos.
We're going to take a short break, and when we come back, we're going to have our very important guest, VIG of the Week, John Kanchowski. Don't go away.
Thank you for listening to the Back Nine Report presented by eDraft.com. We'll be right back. Don't forget to check out our co-hosts on Twitter by clicking their names in the episode description. Now, back to the show.
And we're back, and now it's time time for our VIG, very important guest of the week. His name is John Kaskowski. He's the president and CEO of the Western Golf Association since 2010 when he succeeded the retiring Tom Johnson. He joined the WGA in 1998 and became the vice president of tournaments, his position until he became president in 2010. As the president and CEO, he manages the overall operations of the WGA, the Evans Scholars Program, and three national championships. The WGA sponsors the BMW Championship, a PGA Tour playoff event for the FedEx Cup, and also the Western Amateur and the Western Junior. So, Fred, can you tell us a little bit about this interview?
Yeah, Carlos, as you know, I was invited by one of the directors of the Evans Scholarship Foundation to attend the scholarship selection meeting for Ohio earlier this month at Scioto Country Club in Columbus. I was very impressed with the proceedings and how these young men and women are selected to be given complete full-ride college scholarships and their former caddies. I was surprised to find out the size of the foundation and the thousands of people, students that have received these scholarships over the years. During the meeting, I was able to have a short conversation with John Kaskowski, the president and CEO of the Western Golf Association, which is entrusted with overseeing the Evans Scholarship Foundation. And we just had a great chat, and he passed on some really good information, Carlos. So go ahead and run that.
Okay. Okay, we're having a little problems here. It doesn't want to play. Hold on. Give me just 30 seconds. Technical problems always happen.
Uh-oh.
Here. So, hold on a second. Okay, Fred, let's do this. Let's go and do...
You want me to go on and talk about...
Let's do this. Let's do now the practice session until I can...
Okay.
Work with this. So let's move on now to the practice range instead of the VIG. We'll get it for you. I'll get it worked. So, you know, every week Fred and I pick a topic and we both speak about it. But this week, Fred is going to take everything here with our winter golf travel tips. I'm just going to do the setup for you, you know, because Myrtle Beach, Hilton Head, and Southern Florida have been great golf destination for years. Many golf fans I've never tried some of the other golf resorts areas around the Gulf of Mexico. You know, golfers in the north think they have to travel to the southernmost tip of Florida to get great golf in the winter, when in reality, the Florida Panhandle, Alabama, Mississippi, and even Louisiana have some fantastic golf resorts and will leave a much smaller dent in your wallet than more expensive southern Florida destinations. So, Fred, you have a top five list for us, so take it away and let us know about them.
Yeah, Carlos, number five on the list is the Sandestin Resort and Beach Resort in Destin, Florida. It's on the Panhandle. It's in between Pensacola and Panama City. Sandestin Golf and Beach Resort has they're just miles and miles of white sandy beaches along the Gulf to rest and relax. And the inventory of fantastic eateries and dining options is basically unlimited. There's no way you could ever check them out. I've tried, believe me, I've tried, but there's always new ones and more, and they're all delicious. The Baytown area has suburb dining in the Sandestin Resort itself. It's its own little town, its own little community there. It has entertainment as well as upscale retail shopping for your significant other while you're out there losing golf balls in the Gulf of Mexico. They have every kind of accommodation that you can imagine, from condos to hotels to houses, whatever you want, they got it. They got the high-rise deals where you can get the views out over the bay or the Gulf, whichever. It's just it's fabulous there. They have four first-class golf courses that you can play. You can play a different course pretty much every day of the week. And there's other golf courses outside of Sandestin that are great. In that area, you know, within a 30-mile radius up and down the strip there, there's probably 20 golf courses that you could play if you get tired of playing these four, but you really shouldn't because they're all really, really good. Next on the list, number four. I should say, too, about Sandestin, I used to go, it's a great place for buddies trips. I used to go with a bunch of guys. We would go every year, and we would get two condos. We could sleep four guys in each condo. Everybody had their own bedroom. It was spacious. It was right on the golf course. It was fantastic. We had a great time, and we'd go out to dinner every night at a different restaurant. Sandestin is a great area to do that. We're going to talk about number four. Is Mississippi, the Biloxi Gulfport area. The Beau Rivage, the Hard Rock, and the Island View Casino are just three of the 12 casinos in the Biloxi Gulfport area. Each has stay-and-play golf packages with courses in the area, and the Beau Rivage features the Tom Fazio-designed Fallen Oak that hosts the Champions Tour every April. It is truly one of the finest golf courses I've ever played. In addition, there are over 20 golf courses that can fit every budget and skill level of golfer in the area, from the state line clear over 20 miles west of the area. So there's easy access to golf. You've got great beaches. Again, you've got great seafood in the restaurants. You've got 12 casinos in the area. It's really a lot of fun. Let's talk about number three is Gulf Shores. It's located on the extreme southern heel of the Alabama Boot. On the Gulf of Mexico, Pensacola, Florida is less than an hour away, and Mobile, Alabama is just on the other side of the bay. It has some of the finest beaches in the world. You've got fresh seafood in every restaurant and diner in the area. And believe me, some of the best food can be found in some of the little out-of-the-way places. We ate in a little town, little place. You actually sat out on the deck overlooking the marina. If you go out there at sunset, it just doesn't get any better than that, I'm telling you right now. There's 17 golf courses in the immediate area. I'm going to recommend three from there, Rock Creek, the Peninsula, and Kiva Dunes. Those are all top-flight golf courses. So number two, let's move on down to number two. I'm going to talk about Southwest Louisiana, and I was just down there late this summer. You've got two large casinos there, El Auberge and the Golden Nugget of Lake Charles. For a casino, El Auberge is one of the coolest casinos around. It gave me a sense of Caesar's Palace in Las Vegas, that really cool vibe when you go in there. Southwest Louisiana really surprised me with the variety of golf and other activities that are available. With both those casinos right there, they are very large, and they really have that feeling of Las Vegas. Anything that you want is right there. Lake Charles is located about 30 miles north of the Gulf, so you can easily drive down there to a beach if you want to. They're close to the Texas-Louisiana state lines. In addition to El Auberge, the Golden Nugget has a huge casino with one of the best pools and spas you will find anywhere. I got to sample both, and I will attest to their service and beauty. Both El Auberge and Golden Nugget have built championship 18-hole golf courses. Contraband Creek is a Tom Fazio design and is one of the most enjoyable golf courses that you will ever play. Right next door is the golf club at the Golden Nugget, and you will marvel at the tons of dirt that had to be moved to build this beautiful golf course right in the middle of a swamp. The restaurant at the Golden Nugget Golf Club is 5-star, and the chef is one of the very best in the world. But not to be outdone, the El Auberge, the dining there, too, is outstanding. They offer a 40-ounce bone-in prime rib, and I dare you to eat that, all of that. You will not be able to do it, I guarantee it, but it is wonderful.
I bet I can.
I don't think you can, Carlos. What? I don't know. Okay. It's gigantic.
Okay.
Excuse me. Number one on the list is another place I got to go to earlier this year. And that's actually two resorts in one. They're both on the Robert Trent Jones Golf Trail. It's Lakewood and Magnolia Grove. And then tie in with that, stay at the Battle House Hotel in downtown Mobile. You can easily access both golf courses from downtown Mobile. There's a Marriott at the Lakewood Golf Course that you can stay at. It's very historic. It's great. It's right on the bay. It's very nice. But I personally really enjoyed the Battle House. Plus, you have access to all the downtown dining and activities in Mobile. So I was really impressed with the feel and charm of the city. With the Battle House in downtown, it's a historic landmark. I want to say it was built in like 1904. It's been burned and rebuilt two or three times in its history. But it's restored. It's beautiful. It's gorgeous. It is a wonderful, wonderful place. So you can visit both Robert Trent Jones Golf Trail facilities, Magnolia Grove and Lakewood. There's four. It gives you four 18-hole golf courses, plus a challenging and really cool 18-hole par 3 that's a lot of fun. They're all within a half-hour drive from downtown Mobile. So, again, you've got great dining, entertainment, and even if you're not a golfer, you can go fishing in the golf. You've got the Mobile Bay if you want to go for a boat ride. It's just, you know, there's all kinds of stuff you can do there. You don't have to go and spend a lot of money. All these places are much less expensive than going down to southern Florida where, you know, this time of year everything's really expensive. This is their big season down there, but it's very reasonable and really nice. I really like it down there a lot. So if you haven't already solidified your travel plans for this winter, check out these five locations along the Gulf Coast that have excitement, fine dining, superb beaches, and wonderful golf in Louisiana, Mississippi, Alabama, and Florida, Carlos.
Hey, when snow blankets the fairways of the golf courses to the north, you know, take a cue from the snowbirds and head down to the states in the lower latitudes. Fred has given you a great list, great shopping there. So, you know, since fellow golfers are also flocking south, plan your trip early. Tee times are easier to get if you are in a group of four, so consider also, like you mentioned, a buddy trip, you know, getting a quartet golf buddies together for the trip. Winter is the high season, remember, for the southern U.S. states, and prices peak from October through April, so be ready for that. And also, I would suggest two more things. Schedule smart. Fred mentioned those places have plenty of other things to do, so don't overload yourself on golf. You need to understand also your physical limitations, and golf can also be mentally draining. So to include other types of recreation, shopping, and dining in your itinerary, those places have plenty of it. And if your spouse is accompanying you, some very good points you can earn there. Head to a spa with her. And also, finally, you know, use a top-of-the-line golf travel bag. If you've got an extensive set of clubs, and most decent sets are expensive these days, don't try to save money with a cheap travel bag. They're going to mess up. So get one from a respected manufacturer, and you'll be fine. So that will be my tips right there. That's our winter golf travel tips. Anything else you want to add before we go to our VIG?
No, those are great. That's exactly right, Carlos. The baggage handlers at the they're not known for their tenderness, you know, and loving care with throwing your luggage around. So many golf clubs have been broken. So, yeah, get a good bag. That's a good travel bag. That is really a good tip.
Well, that wraps up our practice range. We're going to take a short break, and now we're going to have John Kaskowski, so don't go away.
Thank you for listening. We'll be right back. In the meantime, don't forget to visit www.edraft.com for analysis, breaking news, and more. Also, remember to follow us on Twitter at eDraftSports and on Facebook at facebook.com/eDraftSports. Don't forget to check out our co-hosts on Twitter by clicking their names in the episode description. Now, back to the show.
And we're back, and now let's go for a very important guest, PIG of the Week, John Kaskowski, the President and CEO of the Western Golf Association.
We are here today talking with John Kaskowski. We are at the Evan Scholarship Selection Committee meetings in Ohio at Scioto Country Club. John is the President and CEO of the Western Golf Association, which oversees the Evan Scholarship Program. And John, we want to welcome you to Back Nine Report today.
Well, thank you very much for having me today.
You know, let's get a little bit of background about yourself. How long have you been with the Western Golf Association, and what actually does that do, and how does it oversee the Evans Scholarship Program?
Yeah, I'm pretty fortunate. I started with the Western Golf Association in 1998, and the Western Golf Association, really, the core business is running three golf tournaments, the BMW Championship. Many of you people would know it as the Western Open. We also run the Western Amateur Championship and the Western Junior Championship, all three of those leaders in their respective fields. But then we also oversee the Evan Scholars Foundation. So the Evan Scholars Foundation was started in 1930 as a means to provide caddies with scholarships to go to college. And I started with the organization in 98 in the tournament division. And then in 2010, they decided to keep me around and promoted me to the president and CEO. So in that role, I not only oversee the Western Golf Association, but also the Evan Scholars Foundation as well.
You have about 100 people that are here today in the selection committee process, and you're interviewing students who are going to be entering college this fall. Can you tell us a little bit about this process, how these students actually got here, and what's kind of involved today?
You know, it's a great process to be involved in, and you know, these young men and ladies that we're interviewing today really give you a great idea of young people in America today. And the process starts when they're younger, probably when they're 13 or 14 year old, when they decide that I want to try to caddy. So first and foremost, everyone that's an Evan Scholar caddies, and these young people have put together tremendous caddy records. They've also excelled in the classroom. They've also excelled outside the classroom in activities in high school or outside of high school. But the process starts, as I said, when they're 13 or 14, they begin caddying. Ultimately, they apply for the Evans Scholarship going into their senior year. So they apply in September of their senior year. They apply online. We review all the applications that we receive nationwide, and this year we received over 760 applications, which is an all-time record, with the goal that we would select 260 individuals throughout the country to receive the Evans Scholarship this year. At our meeting today in Ohio, we're interviewing 24 young men and women with the hopes that they'll pass the oral interview process and ultimately be rewarded the Evans Scholarship. It's not a short process because you've got to put in the hard work, like any scholarship. You have to caddy, you've got to show up, and you've got to exceed in the classroom as well.
Yeah, listening to the stories here this morning from the students we had come in do their oral interviews, very impressive resumes, and their presence in front of a group of 100 older men and women, they really do a great job. It's very impressive.
Yeah, you're being kind. Older, you know, these are like grandparents and parents that they're interviewing in front of. And it's amazing to me, I'm sure you were the same way, as an 18-year-old to get up in front of a group of adults, talk about yourself, answer personal questions. I mean, that would be really difficult, but you know, these kids are able to do it, I think, in large part because they caddy. And caddy, one of the great things about caddying as a young person is you get the chance to interact with adults. You get a chance to see how all adults interact with each other, and it really makes you kind of grow up fast. And a lot of you can see that today.
I agree with that 100%. You guys are spending a lot of money here. How many students now do you have across the country in schools right now?
So we have 910 Evan Scholars currently in school on a full scholarship, which includes tuition and housing. So our annual tuition bill is, you know, and housing is about $16 million. That's what we're trying to raise on an annual basis. And the scholarship program truly is a nationwide program. In other words, we get the base of the strength hold of our operation is really in the Midwest, but we get scholars from all over the country. And we rely on individuals to donate money, provide the opportunities for these young men and women. And we've had some great success over the last several years raising money, and we're actually got plans to grow our program. We have 910 kids in school right now. Our goal is to have 1,000 in school by the year 2020.
That's a tremendous goal, and I know that takes a lot of money. And so anybody that might want to contribute to your program or find your program can find it.
You can go to the Internet. Absolutely. You can go to our website, wgaesf.org. Do a Google search of Evans Scholars Foundation or the Western Golf Association and take you right to our website, and it's easy to make a donation online.
I also want to mention that one of the strengths, one of the key components of the whole Evans Scholarship Program is the idea of offering not only financial support, but also offering the support and mentorship, because the students live together in most of the instances in school. And so there's a continuing program of evaluation, helping each other, and a community kind of thing in school.
That's really true. We like to look at the Evans Scholars Program as a lifelong program. In other words, you know, when you get the scholarship, you go to college and you form these bonds with your fellow Evans Scholars that last a lifetime. But we really feel one of the core, really the core attributes of the program are the scholars living together in school. So as I said, it's a full tuition and housing scholarship. We own and operate 15 scholarship houses around the country where our scholars live together. So freshman year, you move into our scholarship house and you live there for all 4 years and really are part of a community. So our biggest house is at the University of Illinois. We have 125 kids in school at the University of Illinois. We have 40 kids in school at Northwestern University. So it kind of depends on the school. It's it can be a big house, it can be a little house, but it's a welcoming place. The scholars all help each other. They get advice. Keep in mind, these are all first-generation college kids, more or less. They don't know what classes to take. They don't have, their parents probably didn't go to college. Tell them, you know, the ins and outs of college. What these students rely on is each other. And it really helps them build bonds that last a lifetime.
Yeah, I've already talked several kids that have gone to school on Evans Scholars programs and are now alumni and still involved in your programming, helping select new students. And they say that is one of the key strengths of the program is the house, living together, the support and monitoring and bonding that they get from that.
It is, you know, and it's the common denominator of every Evans Scholars that they caddy. That's the common denominator. But then you bring them all together in these houses. They all have different life experiences. They're all from different places. And it's that caddying, that hard work ethic, the ability to get along with anyone is really holds them together. And we have a great alumni network. We've awarded over 10,000 Evans Scholarships since 1930. And our alumni give back. They give back financially. They help the current scholars in school. They help mentor them. They help young people get into caddying. So we're very grateful to our alums.
Just before we let you go here, we're going to go in and enjoy some lunch here in a second, but can you maybe give us a unique story or something that has touched you that you've seen over the years of being involved with the Evans Scholars Program?
You know, it's a tough one because every story is really wonderful. I mean, it's, you know, you meet these young men and women, and I'm fortunate. I've been involved in an organization for 18 years, so now it comes back where I had kids that caddied for me, you know, 18 years ago. Now they're successful business people or teachers or whatever, and it makes you feel really good about what we're doing as an organization. But you know, I would say one story that really sticks out, and it's gotten some attention in the media, is a young man named Jacob Mosley from Detroit. Had just a really tough home life, and his mom was raising a family of four or five and ultimately got evicted from her apartment. And literally their stuff, their belongings, was left on the curb. And he came home, and there's this stuff on the curb, and they lived in a series of homeless shelters in the Detroit area. The young man found caddying and loved caddying, and he caddied for a couple years, applied for the Evans Scholarship, and didn't get it. He was so motivated, he went to Michigan State on his own, walked by the Evans Scholarship House every day while he was in school at Michigan State, said, you know what, I'm going to reapply for the scholarship, I'm going to do whatever it takes to get the scholarship. He reapplied a year later, got the scholarship, and is going to be a tremendous success. He's succeeded at Michigan State and wants to go into business. And Jacob's one small story out of 10,000 that really kind of makes you feel great about what we're doing to help young people get an education.
Chick Evans had a dream, 1930, started with two students, has evolved to over 10,000 over the years. here in Ohio, I think you've got 94 on scholarship now. You're going to add 24 more going ahead for next year, it looks like. The program just keeps continuing to grow.
We're lucky. You know, it's how can you argue that, you know, providing education is not an important thing for people? And I would just say to your listeners that if you ever have the choice to take a caddy, and especially a kid caddy, take the caddy, because you never know the bond that you're going to build, how you're going to help that young man or woman succeed later in life. And, you know, we're really lucky that we've got a great sport out there and a really a great group of young people that are involved in the program.
Well, John, thank you so much for taking time to talk to us today, and we wish you a lot of success with Evans Scholars Program going forward.
Oh, thanks for having me.
There you have it. That was the interview with John Kaskowski. Hey, Fred, you know, they try not to hold it against him. He's a Greendale native and a 1990 University of Wisconsin graduate. Or that he likes the Packers. You know, he's in Chicago right now. So, but I have read that he was a selection that was a terrific choice by the LGA, and at the time, apparently, it was an obvious one. You know, the moment of his selection, like you mentioned, he had been the tournament director of the BMW Championship since 2000. And I've seen that he's extremely well-liked in that golf community. He has earned a reputation for being a solid administrator. And this Chick Evans Caddy Scholarship is something incredible every year. More than 800 serving caddies across the country attend college on this four-year scholarship from the Evans Scholar Foundation. And that story from Chick Evans back there, how it went to be and starting in 1930 is incredible.
Yeah, Carlos, I've just been really impressed with the whole thing. I'm currently writing actually a feature article that's going to be in the February issue of NWO Golf Links about the Evans Scholarship Foundation, the history of it, where it's at today. Actually interview a couple guys that that are alumni of the Evans Scholars Foundation program. Also talk a little bit about the Western Golf Association. And it really interesting stuff as I've gotten into it a little bit more. Really enjoy finding out. But here in Ohio, Ohio State and the University of Miami both have Evans Scholars houses, and the caddies that are accepted are given the scholarships can choose to go to either one of those. At the Ohio meeting, there was a young man that actually caddied here in Toledo, but he lived up in Michigan, and he's chosen to go to Michigan State. So he will go to Michigan State even though he caddied here in Ohio. So these houses really help the mentoring and process. The caddying helps the young people mature, how to deal and work with adults, and just the fact of being out there working on their own, you know, learning the idea that service is very important in their business. Yeah, it's just a great program all the way around. I'm really impressed with it, Carlos.
And if you want more information about it, go to www.wgaesf.org or just Google it and you'll find it. That wraps up our VIG. We're going to take one more short break. When we come back, we're going to have our final thoughts and the end of the show, so don't go away.
Thank you for listening. We'll be right back. In the meantime, don't forget to visit www.edraft.com for analysis, breaking news, and more. Also, remember to follow us on Twitter at edraftsports and on Facebook at facebook.com/edraftsports. Now, back to the show.
And we're back, and now we're going to get our final putts in, and I'm going to start as usual. I'm going to start talking about, you know, on Monday, Tiger Woods and Mitchell, we met up at an event for Woods Foundation and even had an impromptu shipping lesson. No big deal, right? Well, we seem more than a little excited about it on Instagram after the fact. If you see all the photos she took and posted, and Woods seemed pretty happy after their meetup as well. Will Tiger's teachings will help? We don't know. We'll have to wait and see. You know, he's not playing that very good, but he might still have the mind for it. So, but no matter what happens,
I got a question here.
Yes,
now, we're talking about Tiger Woods, right?
Right, Tiger Woods.
So, if I were going to get a chipping lesson, you know, what's wrong with Victor Dubuisson or Zach Johnson? You know, those guys can chip, okay? I wonder what David Ledbetter thought about Michelle Wee, you know, working with Tiger on that. And didn't Tiger just have the chipping yips like a year ago?
Well, that's a mechanics thing, I think, you know. And more mind, though. So he still has the knowledge for it, so he's pretty good at it. When he was, you
okay.
know, that time, when he used to rule the world of golf, but not anymore. But anyway, no matter what happens, you know, at least they made for one heck of a Stanford University alumni magazine photo opportunity there. So glad they enjoyed it. Another piece of news, you know, PGA of America president and Malone Golf Club general manager Dirk Sprague is the new managing director of the exclusive Liberty National Golf Club in Jersey City, New Jersey. That announcement was made by Liberty National co-founders Paul and Dan Fireman. Sprague will be employed by the PGA Tour as part of its expanded operational relationship with Liberty National. The PGA Tour had announced a 25-year partnership with Liberty National back in 2014 that included a spot as the host site for the 2017 President's Cup and up to 10 PGA Tour tournaments, including the first of the four FedEx Cup playoff events in 2019. So there you have it. And finally, also I have that another professional golf event. This time it's headed for Nashville, and it's going to be the Nashville Golf Open, a web.com tour event that will be played in Nashville Golf and Athletic Club this June, and an official announcement was made last Tuesday. The tournament will have a purse of $550,000 and will be sponsored by Brentwood-based Tour Visions Promotions. The first tournament is scheduled for this June 13th to the 19th. It's a part of a five-year agreement to play the tournament in Nashville through 2020. This will be the third PGA event in the state. The PGA holds the FedEx St. Jude Classic in Memphis from June 9 to the 12th, and the web.com tour also holds the New Sentinel Open in August 18 to the 21 there in Memphis.
Hey, Carlos, I see where you missed out on another great home deal in Dallas. It's reported that George Spieth is going to spend $7 million of his $58 million that he earned last year on Hunter Mahan's old digs. Didn't he just move into a $5 million pad last year? You know, he's going to be keeping the movers busy down there in Texas. Couple other things real quick. Dottie Pepper, who transitioned from an outstanding player to a respected on-course television reporter, maybe Fox can get her, has been named winner of the 2016 William D. Richardson Award by the Golf Writers Association of America. Also, the Golf Writers is going to honor Davis Love and J.B. Holmes at the organization's annual awards dinner on April 6th in Augusta, Georgia. I plan on being there. Love was named winner of the ASAP Sports Jim Murray Award, given to a professional who demonstrates cooperation and accommodation to the media. And Holmes, who has won four times his 10-year career, will receive the Ben Hogan Award in recognition of staying active in golf despite a physical handicap. Veteran Judy Bell will receive the Bob Jones Award. It's the highest award given by the United States Golf Association. It's been presented annually since 1955 and recognizes an individual who demonstrates the spirit, personal character, and respect for the game exhibited by Jones, winner of 9 USGA championships. If you remember, Barbara Nicklaus was honored with this award last year. And also, real quickie here, Steve Stricker plans to play a little bit more in 2016. His back and neck are feeling better than they have felt for years. He's planning on playing 15 events, and that's not even counting the majors, WGCs, and playoff events, which he's currently not eligible for. So he's still looking for a major title that would just cap off a really successful year for him. So good luck to Steve Stricker, Carlos. That's all I have for tonight.
And Back Nine is that wraps up another week of the Back Nine Report presented by eDraft.com. It's always our pleasure to bring you the latest on the world of golf. Thank you for listening to us for the past hour. Special thanks to our VIG, very important guest of the week, John Kaskowski. Don't forget to join us again next Tuesday here on Black Talk Radio. And also to tune in at 8 p.m. Eastern Time or download our show on iTunes. If you haven't done so, follow the show. Our Twitter ID is at Back9Report with the number 9 in the middle. My name is Carlos Torres, along with Fred Alvader. We wish you to be happy, be blessed, and enjoy the great game of golf. Happy golfing, everybody.
Good night, everybody.